Winter, 1935. State tests again. Miss Freeland said our grade topped the entire state of Oklahoma on the state tests again, 24 points higher than the state average. Wish I could run home and tell Ma, and see her nod and hear her say, "I knew you could." It would be enough. January, 1935. Christmas dinner without the cranberry sauce. Miss Freeland was my ma at the school Christmas dinner. I thought I'd be the only one without a real ma, but two other motherless girls came. We served turkey, chestnut dressing, sweet potatoes, and brown gravy. Made it all ourselves, and it came out pretty good. Better than the Christmas dinner I made for my father at home, where we sat at the table, silent, just the two of us. Being there without ma, without the baby, wouldn't have been so bad if I just remembered the cranberry sauce. My father loved Ma's special cranberry sauce, but she never showed me how to make it. January, 1935. Driving the cows. Dust piles up like snow across the prairie, dunes leaning against fences, mountains of dust pushing over barns. Joe DeLaFleur can't afford to feed his cows. Can't afford to sell them. County Agent Dewey comes, takes the cows behind the barn, and shoots them. Too hard to watch their lungs clog with dust, like our chickens suffocated. Better to let the government take them than suffer the sight of their bony hides sinking down into the earth. Joe DeLaFleur rides the range. Come spring, he'll gather Russian thistle, pulling the plant while it's still green and young, before the prickles form, before it breaks free to tumble across the plains. He gathers thistle to feed what's left of his cattle, his bone-thin cattle, cattle he drives away from the dried-up Beaver River to where the Cimarron still runs, pushing the herd across the breaks where they might last another week, maybe two until it rains. January, 1935. First rain. Sunday night, I stretch my legs in my iron bed under the roof. I place a wet cloth over my nose to keep from breathing dust and wipe the grime tracings from around my mouth and shiver, thinking of Ma. I am kept company by the sound of my heart drumming. Restless, I tangle in the dusty sheets, sending the sand flying, cursing the grit against my skin, between my teeth, under my lids, swearing I'll leave this forsaken place. I hear the first drops. Like the tapping of a stranger at the door of a dream, the rain changes everything. It strokes the roof, streaking the dusty tin, ponging. A concert of rain notes, spilling from gutters, gushing through gullies, soaking into the thirsty earth outside. Monday morning dawns, cloaked in mist. I button into my dress, slip on my sweater, and push my way off the porch, sticking my face into the fog, into the moist skin of the fog. The sound of dripping surrounds me as I walk to town. Soaked to my underwear, I can't bear to go through the schoolhouse door. I want only to stand in the rain. Monday afternoon, Joe DeLaFleur brushes mud from his horse. Mr. Kincannon hires my father to pull his olds out of the muck on Route 64. And later, when the clouds lift, the farmers surveying their fields nod their heads as the frail stalks revive. Everyone, everything grateful for this moment, free of the weight of dust. January, 1935. Hayden P. Nye. Hayden P. Nye died this week. I knew him to wave. He liked the way I played piano. The newspaper said when Hayden first came, he could see only grass. Grass and wild horses and wolves roaming. Then folks moved in and sod got busted. And bushels of wheat turned the plains to gold, and Hayden P. Nye grabbed the Oklahoma panhandle in his fist and held on. By the time the railroad came in on land Hayden sold them, the buffalo and the wild horses had gone. Some years, Hayden Nye saw the sun dry up his crop, saw the grasshoppers chew it down. But then came years of rain, and the wheat thrived and his pockets filled, and his big laugh came easy. They buried Hayden Nye on his land, busted more sod to lay down his bones. Will they sow wheat on his grave where the buffalo once grazed? January, 1935. Scrubbing up dust. Walking past the Crystal Hotel, I saw Jim Martin down on his knees. He was scraping up mud that had dried to crust after the rain mixed with dust Sunday last. When I got home, I took a good look at the steps and the porch and the windows. I saw them with Ma's eyes and thought about how she'd been haunting me. I thought about Ma, who would have washed clothes, beaten furniture, aired rugs, scrubbed floors down on her knees, brush in hand, breaking that mud like the farmers break sod, always watching over her shoulder for the next duster to roll in. My stubborn Ma. She'd be doing it all with my brother Franklin to tend to. She never could stand a mess. My father doesn't notice the dried mud. Least he never tells me. Not that he tells me much of anything these days. With Ma gone, if the mud's to be busted, the job falls to me. It isn't the work I hate, the knuckle-breaking work of beating mud out of every blessed thing, but every day my fingers and hands ache so bad, I think I should just let them rest. Let the dust rest, let the world rest. But I can't leave it rest on account of Ma. Haunting. January, 1935.